QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. That's at a 147.330 megahertz, offset of a plus 600 kilohertz, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for the net? Please call KF6Q. There's a repeater giving its announcement in Morse code. Anyway, I hope everybody out there had a safe holiday weekend. Glad to have you back here today. And looks like we've had a little change of weather up here at Big Bear and down the hill. I prefer the weather up here. Just came from down the hill. It's not a pretty picture. Anyway, announcements are basically we will have, again, ham testing at the end of this month. Big Bear Lake Fire Station, last Sunday at 1 o'clock. Another announcement is through the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We are in the process of setting up an Elmer program. We've got a couple ideas of how we're going to do this. A lot of this is to help a lot of the new techs out there, and we have a lot of them this year. Information about programming their radios, if they need that, or just setting them up to get into the repeater so they can talk, and other questions. So we're going to, you know, try to get that rolling before the end of the year, and that gives us a lot of time, but, you know, we'll see if we can cut it in quicker than that. Anyway, the topic for the evening is a little bit open this evening. I know that we've had a couple things we've been talking about with emergency power and different things. Couple little things we just want to mention tonight, and we're going to leave part of the tail end of this net open for other items that you out there want to talk about. So leave it a little bit of an open night. I think that might be a good idea. All right, well, we're going to call a roster here of the people, acknowledgement for people who are there out there just about every week, and we do appreciate you, you know, checking in each week and being out there listening and helping with all our topics. And we're going to start out with WB6CLZ, Mike.
Tom, we're here, and we have a little bit better DX report than we had. Still not where we want it, but we're good. So check me in, and you can also check Cindy in. She's laying on the other side of the couch. She's pooped out from cutting plants down today. Back to net control, WV6CLZ.
Wife and Big Bear, 2 months ago you're planting them. Today you're cutting them down. No, I know what you mean. Anyway, let's... we'll see if we can reach out there to Lucerne Valley. KA6CIA, George.
Good evening, Tom. KA6CIA.
All right, George, glad to have you out there. Let's see, we got KE6RJ, Harry. And nothing heard. How about KE6QI, Nancy? And nothing heard. I'm going to try here for AF6ZJ. Sometimes he's there, sometimes he's not. Guy, are you out there this evening? Nothing heard. How about KI6SKN, Chris?
Good evening, everyone on the net. I am here, KI6SKN.
All right, Chris, glad to have you out there, the voice of Maltby. KJ6HCS, Mike. That's a rarity. And we're going to check in his dad if he's out there, K6EKX, and move on to KJ6FIL, Mike.
Good evening, Tom and the group. KJ6FIL. What a beautiful weekend it was up in Big Bear, even if we did have a little bit of the wet stuff, which was great for knocking down the dust and keeping the fire hazard down. But it was a great weekend one way or another. Everybody have a good one, KJ6FIL.
Hey, Mike, if you're down there in Redlands, I just came through Highland area a little while ago at 108. Yeah, 108, that's what it said. So anyway, my heart goes out to you, buddy. This is definitely cool up here. All right, let's move on to KJ6KDL. Jim.
KJ6KDL here with KJ6KDK.
All right, Jim and Rosemary, glad to have you out there. And how about W6GZI, Frank?
Good evening, this is W6GZI.
Well, Frank, yeah, we're going to have you do a wake-up call out there to Guy once in a while here. How about KI6ITUA, Kelly?
Sir, yes, sir. How high, sir? KI6IQA.
Hey, Kelly, glad to have you out there, and appreciate that. Checking in just about every evening there. K6GVL, Ron, Green Valley.
Good evening, Tom and Annette. This is Ron, K6GVL, Green Valley Lake.
Thanks, Ron. Appreciate you being out there. We're going to see if we can squeeze in here N6BOP and from Pomona. Yeah, she might be hanging out over there at Keller. How about 8D6PL, Harold?
Evening, AD6PL.
Hey, good evening there, Harold, and thanks for being out there again. Then from Harupa Valley, K6LCS, Clint.
Tech Tuesday, Tom, good evening. Another exciting week in the world of ham satellites. Talk to you in a couple minutes.
Okay, Clint, appreciate that, and love the information you bring to us just about every week. Alrighty, let's see here, moving on down, we have KJ6MFO. Jay, are you out there this evening? No Jay. Okay, well anyway, yeah, OJ, no Jay. Ah, W6JLM, Judith.
It's from now until next spring, KJ6IQA.
Okay. I must have stepped on part of that, but it must have been something, an orange juice joke, yeah. W6JLM, Judith. They're probably watching Jeopardy. How about KI6OHN, John? And nothing heard. How about K6YNW, Chris?
Good evening. And it didn't get over 100 here in the low desert, K6YNW.
Well, that's good to hear for your sake there, Chris. Yeah, the Inland Empire was really pushing the limit today, so. I don't know, it's that last little surge before the end. KD6LAN, Bill.
Chop Ellis, Signore. Good evening, all. KD6LAN.
Okay, Bill, thanks for checking in. That's from the Italian section there of Boulder Bay. Alrighty, well, let's see, moving down here. Don't know if Victor's out there. AE6CK, Victor. Nothing heard. How about KA6ROD, Rod?
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD.
Hello, Rod. Glad to have you with us. And by the way, like I said, when you sent us that rain and hail, got to put more postage on it, buddy. Didn't make it to Sugarloaf. All right, KB6LTY, Christy, Apple Valley.
KB6LTY.
All right, Christy, glad to have you out there. AE6TV, Hunt. Yeah, nothing heard there. Let's give a shout out here for NQ7RD, Rick and Corona. Yeah, nothing heard. This is KF6Q on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater with Tech Tuesday. Every Tuesday, 1900 hours. I think I got the last one on the list here. I got a couple on the backside here, too. Let's see. K6TUX, Key. Okay, nothing heard there. Got a couple others here, but I think they're some periodical check-ins. Let's see. Anybody else out there like to check in to Tech Tuesday? Please come in now.
W6KMM.
W6JET.
Okay, I got W6KMM. Ken, I thought you'd be jeopardying it. Glad to have you out there, though, Ken. And W6JET, glad to have you as a guest up here. Anybody else?
KJ6MYV.
Did you see us?
All right, I have KJ6, I think I had in here. Yeah, MYV, and I believe that's in Apple Valley, is that correct?
Roger that. Alpha Valley, the name here is Larry. Lima Alpha Romeo, Romeo Yankee.
All right. Well, glad to have you with us. And there was somebody else after you, but I didn't catch the call. Want to come back?
Bravo Victor.
HZS.
Okay. Call sign Victor. Gotcha. And ACS Mike. Glad to have you in here. We did check in your dad. Well, you know what, Mike, when you don't check in, we're going to have to send out, look out Larry as a search and rescue for you, buddy. Anybody else out there?
And N6 BLP wants to be checked in also.
Okay, roger that. We'll check her in. Anybody else?
W6POO.
Hey, this is KF6QJY. Look out, Larry. I just jumping in here. Thank you.
Okay, look out, Larry. Glad to have you. And we had a W6B something. Didn't get the rest. Please come back.
Yeah, that was W6POO, Whiskey 6, Papa, Ocean. The QTH is Palm Springs.
That's my friend Chip, K6YNW here.
All right, well, glad you could check in with us this evening. I think I've heard you on the repeater lately, W6POO, Palm Springs, and anybody else?
KF7AJB.
KF7AKG, is that correct?
Kilo Foxtrot 7, Hotel Alpha, Bravo. The name is John. I'm mobile in the East Mojave. My home location is Las Vegas, Nevada.
KF7, Hotel Alpha Bravo, John, mobile, East Mojave. Well, drive safe out there. Are you on your way back to Las Vegas?
Yeah, we're out here four-wheeling right now near south west of Searchlight. And, yeah, we'll be headed back to Las Vegas tonight. KF7AJB, back in net control.
Roger that. Are you in the vicinity of Searchlight, Nevada? Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm about 10 miles southwest of Searchlight, Nevada. KF7HAB.
I know exactly where you're at. And I got to tell you, that's you got a really good signal in the repeater from there. That's quite a distance. Wow. Anybody else out there, please come back. Okay, got you in here. A little bit weak in the repeater, but that's okay. Got you checked in there. I think you were trying to get in before there. Anybody else? Last call. All right. Appreciate everybody listening out there. Always love the guests checking in. And we're always gonna have to redo this list here, as we're getting a lot of people that are part timers are becoming regulars. So appreciate that. First thing we do in the evening is we go to a DX report with HF radio just to see what's happening out there, and this is for the benefit of all the general class or above out there. Mike, we'll start with you, WB6CLZ. What's happening in the other continents?
Well, I don't have any specific information about that, Tom, but I can tell you what's happening a little bit with the sun and what I've been playing around with. Space weather at this time is reporting a sunspot number of 102, which is, yeah, pretty good. Not fantastic. We got a solar flux index of 119 solar flux units, so that's pretty good, too. You know, we're expecting, if we get lucky, we're expecting maybe up to a maximum of 140 SFU out of this cycle, so we'll see. Things are looking better. We had an X2 class solar flare go off earlier today on a scale of 1 to 9. 2 is a lower class X flare, but X class solar flare is the strongest, one of the strongest flares we get. So going to mess this up for a while, but when that settles down, hopefully things will get cooking out there, and we'll be able to get some decent DX going. Yesterday had a little bit of a day off, so I was playing around, worked a couple of stations in Cuba, a Japanese station, Dominican Republic, on 17-meter sideband. Then on CW yesterday, we worked EW1DA in Belarus, Russia, on 17CW. On 20-meter CW, we worked UA0IBO, not too far from Mongolia in Asian Russia. So, you know, things aren't bad, but not where we would like to see them yet. But let's see if anybody else has anything better. This is WB6CLZ back to net control.
Well, Mike, I appreciate that, and it's not better. It's just more information. It's all good information. I appreciate that, Mike. Good report there on all the solar conditions, and you know, like I said, it changes all the time, and we'll see what happens with the solar cycle. Let's see, anybody else out there? I don't know, Chris, kind of copied the mail. How are you doing out there? KI6SKN.
Yes, Tom, I haven't done much. I woke up one morning early, and at about 5:30 in the morning, I did make contact with a guy in Guam. That's about it. I haven't been on the HF much. Gonna have to start doing that again. Now that looks like the thunder boomers and lightning have cleared up, that's one of the main reasons I haven't tried much. I keep the antenna disconnected during all that heavy activity in the sky, we'll say. Back to you, Tom. KI6SKN.
Quite understandable, as we've covered a lot of very scary stuff about lightning, and by golly, it just never hurts to be safe, so good deal there. Anybody else out there with any of the HFDX report? Before we close that out, please come back. Alrighty, nothing heard there, so we're going to move on to our ham satellite and ISS report. Clint, K6LCS, what's cooking?
Good evening, Tech Tuesday, Tom and Annette. If you've been waiting for your reception report certificate for AeroSat 1, they're coming. They're coming. I don't know. I cannot figure out how they're doing it, but it's a manual process. But I got a couple this week from contacts I made end of the first week of August. So if you submitted your report and looking for the certificate in the mail or in the email, it's coming. Hey, this Saturday, big day for satellites, big day for amateur radio here in the Southwest Division of the NWRL. Stand by for a sec. If you're not coming to the NWRL Southwest Division Convention in Torrance this weekend, at least work some sats with us, because we have satellite passes all day long. The vendors are open from 8 to 5 on Saturday. At 7:47 in the morning, we've got SO50 going over. At 9:26 in the morning, Arisat 1 is going right over the venue, right over us. Then at noon, I'm giving my satellite show upstairs at noon. Break for a sec. And then we have AO27 coming over at 2:41. AO51 making an appearance for us at 3:48. And SO50 again at 4:22. So all day long we've got passes. If you're coming over, look for the yellow signs with the satellite schedules all over the place, check in and all over the place. And we'll be working the satellites from the roof of the parking structure right across from the main entrance. Tom, you know, I sound like a broken record. AO51 has bad batteries, a dead cell, a cell at 0.1 volt, but it's kicking out 850 plus milliwatts for us the last 6 to 7 weeks. It's been doing great for us when it's in sun here on the West Coast. AO27 has been up there decades, and it's pumping out. It's doing great. Arisat 1. It might be in an emergency power mode. Stand by for a sec. If you're looking for the SSTV or the voice recordings coming down on 2 meter, be patient with Arisat 1. It might be in a mode where it's 30 to 40 seconds of transmission, then up to 5 minutes of silence. So if you know it's there, you don't hear anything, be patient and wait. It might be between 2 and 5 minutes of silence between transmissions. So Tom, that's it. Please try and support the NWRL this weekend if you can. If not, work satellites with us at, all the way from 7:47 in the morning to 4:22 in the evening, and drop by from between noon and 2 upstairs to see some more bad jokes from K6LCS on the satellite presentation. Thank you, Tech Tuesday, Tom. K6LCS.
Okay, Chris, appreciate that. You know, and everybody out there, this AO51 satellite, I mean, I have worked that in times past up to 10 degree angles, maybe even a little bit lower. I'm not sure if that's doable now with that low power, but for anybody out there listening, 800 milliwatts, that's just barely over a half a watt. A nightlight, in comparison with basic AC wattage, a nightlight is usually 7 watts. A CB radio is about 5 watts. Our HTs are 5 watts. And the satellite is up there with half a watt. It is 500 miles out there when it's straight overhead. And that's pretty awesome. You're looking at just barely over half a watt at over 500 miles away. That's what they call line of sight. That's pretty awesome in itself.
LCS for a sec.
Go ahead, Quinn.
Yeah, I forgot. This is not commercial in nature, but if you're thinking of buying an Elk Long Periodic, the Aero Cool satellite antenna, or for your BNC handheld, the AL800, come down to the show and get it. I've got some deals happening with HRO Anaheim, and $30 off of an Elk, about $10 off on an Aero, and about $5 off on that AL800. So it might behoove you to drop on down. Thanks, Tom.
Well, Quint, that's great. I know a lot of the sponsors of that event you're talking about there and put a lot of effort into helping put something like that together. Always good to support them. They offer great deals, and that money goes to a good cause, basically. It keeps them going around and keeps us going around, so... Appreciate that, Clint. Appreciate all that information. and let's get to our topic. By the way, our topic, basically we're going to just review a little bit real quick, a couple things, and then we're going to leave it kind of open here for all our people out there to a Q&A session. I did have a rather busy day, but I think that this is something we should do once in a while anyway. So we're not running the show all the time. You guys are the main event, so let me reset. Well, I heard Harold out there talking about putting in an inverter into his vehicle, and we're going to kind of start off with that. Basically, Harold, I know I've got one too, and it's still not in the vehicle. And that was, Harold, if you want to just give us a little information for all our listeners that check in here at 7, what are you up to there?
What it is, it's a 400 watt. 300 watt will run off your cigarette lighter. That is the most you can put it on cigarette lighter. Otherwise, you have to go direct to your battery. Well, they send it with a little cable and a set of alligator clips, but I wanted it inside the car. So that if I need to use it, I'm going to stand out in the rain. I had already, for my radios, run jumper wires, 10-gauge jumper wires from my battery terminals to two 50-amp DC circuit breakers, running my wires for all my radios off of that. I'm going to build something different later, but it works very good right now. So I hooked this to that, ran 10-gauge wire through the firewall. That's as far as I've gotten. What I'm going to end up doing, though, is when I get the parts, put an inch and a half or two-inch aluminum angle on a board that I have above my windshield for my radio mounting, put a couple of binding posts, two sets of binding posts, toggle switch for on-off, and a cigarette receptacle, cigarette lighter receptacle, so I have whatever type of power I need up there. Pardon me. And let me reset. And then what it is, I went to Harbor Freight. I bought 400 watt Chicago, whatever the heck it is. It's a really, I was a little leery of it. It's very small. It's 7.5 inches long. It's 4 inches wide, 2 inches deep. Two grounded 120 plugs on the front of it. Two binding posts on the back for your hookup. I ran it 2.5 watts for 15 minutes, and it does barely get warm on the bottom. You can just feel a little warm. So I tested it before, and I would suggest this before you put anything good on it. Take a drill motor with a 2.5 amp 120 motor in it, and use that to test it to make sure that the thing's not going to do something squirrely on you. AD6PL.
Well, that sounds pretty good, and I know that's basically to get some 110 or 120 volt available out there in the mobile, which is always a good thing. And a lot of this is basically what you're doing there. All this low voltage wiring, kind of special. You got to be careful. Obviously, fuse this stuff up. One of the greatest things out there, and I'm going to call them the boombox cars or trucks era. And essentially, with all the power they draw, they have made available because of desire and what you call it, supply and demand, a lot of this great heavy gauge wire. Sometimes probably heavier than what we need for ham radio use, but heavy wire, fuse blocks, and all the gizmos and gadgets. So if you're looking for something like this to set up even your 12 volt ham rig, check out your local car audio stereo store for cars. You're gonna find a lot of stuff there. Let me reset. Next best place would be off-road, because a lot of stuff off-road there with lights. Unless they're running the really expensive lights, and even then they can add up to a lot of power. A lot of stuff out there too for wires and fuse blocks and stuff. I'm forgetting where I bought mine for my Jeep, but, you know, there are electronic stores. And Harold, I know there's one not too far from you, right next to, was that Clure and Harris? I think it's Riverside Warehouse or something. Anyway, electronics warehouse, yeah, something like that. Anyway, a lot of good stuff out there, and this is important to get it done right. Be careful, and if you don't feel safe about it, there's an option there. Go to a stereo installer. You don't want to buy the stereo, but I'm sure they can wire something up before a stereo, which would then not be your stereo, it would be your ham radio. Any other comments out there? Mike, anything to add to that?
No, not necessarily. I've got a couple of those little 400-watt inverters in the package for emergency use, but they look like they're going to work out pretty well. And, yeah, installer's the way to go if you're not confident with installing your rig. It wouldn't be that much, and the cost, if you didn't do it right, would be a lot more.
Comment? Okay, one second there, Harold. I'll get right back to you. Yeah, as we had talked probably a few weeks ago, about batteries, just the basic batteries and how much power is stored in there. It's just very awesome. So we want to make sure it's wired right. A short could be very, very costly, if not, you know, devastating to some of your equipment there. Go ahead, Harold.
Right, I bought my wire over at Electronic Warehouse. They had some really nice color-coded zip, 10-gauge zip wire, and they got 8-gauge zip. That's good heavy insulation. I had the guy look on the chart to make sure. I'm only running a 10-foot run on it, so that's sufficient for what I'm drawing. And these new cars got all these little computer chips in them, and some of them run as much. One mechanic told me that the stuff he works on, some of them run between $2,000 and $3,000. He said for around $1,000 is nominal. And it takes one micro amp to blow one of them. And if you do that, why, then they're going to charge you another $1,000 to dig it out and put a new one in. But if you go to the dealer and find a good dealer that knows what they're doing, talk to them right, a lot of the companies now are putting terminals in to hook your stuff up to. It's a little box with a hot and a cold. GMC and Chevy put it in their pickups over by where the auxiliary battery case goes. I've noticed that on two of those. Then I think Toyota puts a little red box on some of the new stuff up by the radiator somewhere. And I heard that some of the other manufacturers have gotten tired of people coming in that reached in with a wire and then come back complaining to 86 PL.
Comment.
Go ahead, comment.
Yeah, this is George, K6CIA. I just wanted to comment on the inverter. I've been running the 3,000-watt inverter for quite some time. And when you want to figure your voltage, because if you use 1 amp AC light bulb or whatever it is, it takes 10 amps to run that out of your battery through the inverter. So you want to figure your amperage that you're pulling out of the inverter while you're doing that. And one trick I learned is because you have to run such heavy wire from the battery to the inverter, and the larger the inverter, well, the bigger the wire has to be, is to mount the inverter as close to the battery as possible. Put a remote switch on and off for it inside your vehicle or wherever you're going to have it, and run your AC up, because there's a lot less line drop on AC than there is on DC, so you can run quite a distance with the AC out of the inverter and still have your voltage up there. Okay, 6CIA.
INW.
Okay, one moment there, Chris. Yeah, George, I guess that's the ratio. We have the ratio of 10 to 1 of 12 volts to 120 volts. So we're going to basically, with that inverter, we're getting 10 times the current. So it doesn't take much. Like you say, basically 1 amp at 120 volts equates out to 10 amps there at the low voltage. And I think that a lot of that could be switched, as I'm just going to put Chris on standby there for a second. George, actually switching that heavy current, it would be best to do that through, I'm going to call it a firewall-type solenoid. Would that be correct?
Yes, you can do that. But I just ran it directly from the battery to the inverter, and I put a heavy fuse in it, and then the AC ran to any place I wanted it. But that worked fairly well for me. But it depends on the size inverter that you're running and what you're going to run with it. Another thing I did, I had that 3,000 watt, and it had three fans in it. But when you're running something that draws only a half an amp or so, you don't need those fans all running because that runs your batteries down also. So I put mini switches on each fan, took the thing apart, put a mini switch on them, so I could turn them off. And then I'd feel if the inverter, if it was starting to get warm, I'd turn a fan on. If I was going to do some soldering, I'd turn all three fans on. So there's tricks you can do. There is an idling current that you're using when the inverter is on that has to be added in also, which my inverter had a 3-amp idle current, so that had to be added to whatever I was drawing out of there. K6CIA.
Okay, George, appreciate that. Yes, YNW. Chris, go ahead.
Yeah, a couple things. Number one, some people think they're going to watch TV, you know, out in the, on the road, but that requires a sine wave. Some of them are, some aren't. Some are a square wave. And the second thing is, run any of those things off the battery if you're not right in the middle of the city or something. Have a separate battery. It's no fun not starting in the morning. K6YNW.
And funny you should mention that. That's exactly where we're headed next with dual batteries, secondary batteries, and charging systems. There's a whole nother opening, a whole nother door there. Alternators, beefed up alternators to take the load of that. There's a lot of different things that can be done with the charging system. And of course, we're all looking at this as getting this backup power for our radios and equipment if we're out there mobile. We talked about the batteries and what batteries are good for starting the car, and possibly that backup battery might be maybe a deep cycle instead of a start your car battery. And the alternators, of course, a lot of times, I know with my Ford truck, F-250, super whammy double throwback V10, problem is it doesn't have a beefy alternator. It's got a bare minimum, I think it's rated at about 110 amps or something, and the best guy told me after I had to replace the diode pack, he says, dump that thing as soon as you can, at least get something that's closer to 200 amps. So a lot of times stock equipment is there for stock car and truck. We start adding stuff. We got to be careful and just, you know, sometimes it, you got to spend more money than what you think. Let me reset. And this is KF6Q with Tech Tuesday on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, conditions permitting. And another thing too, when you get that backup battery, of course there are special control units that you can purchase that actually will make sure you do not run down your primary starting battery. This is used a lot in police vehicles, any vehicle that's like a first responder where they're going to have their radio running, could be on site someplace for hours on end. And essentially what it will do is it will only run the off of the primary start battery for a while until it gets to this critical limit, and then run off the backup. The backup battery, of course, is meant for that. Make sure that you always have one good battery, the primary battery, ready to start your vehicle. There's another thing, and Chris, I think that's what you were kind of aiming at there. Any comments or questions on this, please come back. This is Open Night here on Tech Tuesday. It's KF6Q.
Comment. Oh,
Go ahead, Harold.
Right. One thing I forgot to mention, this little unit, I just got it. I've had it about a week. Works great. I was really surprised getting it at Harbor Freight for $40. Well, I got it on sale for $34. But it has an automatic shutdown for low supply from your battery at 10.8. It sounds an alarm and then shuts off. So you should have enough left to get started then, unless you're really dumb and you restart AD6PL.
Okay, Harold, appreciate that. I don't know, we still got KJ6FIL and KI6IQA. I think both of you have been involved with off-road equipment a lot. And any comments out there on jumping up the alternator rating? Cars obviously got to be able to be turned over by the car or truck. That's usually not an issue. I'll send it over to Mike FIL. Mike, ever worked with anything like with a oversized alternator? Because I know they're required to get one of those off-road welding units, and that's the bare minimum I know for that. FIL.
Okay, I haven't really gotten into a lot of that part of it, but a lot of times you can get a bigger alternator for your vehicle. You may have to do a little bit of bracket work to do it, but as far as mounting your dual battery system and everything in, it's very fine. But one thing you have to make sure of is you put an isolator in, and you run most of your equipment off of your reserve battery and not your main battery. And the isolator will keep, you know, both batteries fully charged at all times, but it'll also keep from draining your main battery when you're using the reserve battery on your, winch, inverters or whatever. So you can go ahead and run those down as much as you want on the reserve, but you definitely got to have an isolator in line with it. Back to you, KJ6FIL.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mike. Yeah, I know I've got a 12K Warren on my Jeep, and it came stock with, I'm going to say number two wire, or maybe it was number one, and just enough to get to the battery. So a lot of current, you know, out there, a lot of drain on the battery, and I'm still running a single battery. I know with a Jeep you can run duals. It is a little bit of a mounting nightmare on the older Jeeps. I got basically a Wrangler, but I'm sure it can be done. I've seen pictures of it being done. I'm just looking at that thinking there's got to be a better way. Don't know if Kelly's out there. Kelly, ever been working around any of that stuff with the alternators and stuff like that for off-road? KI6IQA, you still out there?
I'm out here, Tom, but I got overrun by the blonde tide, so I didn't hear exactly what you were talking about, but I do know that some of those onboard welders that guys either build or buy, the guts to the welder is basically an old Chrysler alternator with a couple of little gadgets on one side and the other, and what do you know? The thing will make enough current to weld with. So, I need to do some alternator work with the Yoda Pillar. I'm not sure if my alternator's gone or my battery's gone or both or neither, but thing has a bad dead battery more than it has a live battery. So, I've got my work cut out for me. KI6IQA.
Another comment.
Okay, Kelly, appreciate that. And just one second there, Mike, FIL. I know that when my alternator went, of course, it went pretty quick, and I didn't realize how fragile it was until I talked to somebody about it, big truck, medium-sized truck, pretty good-sized alternator. Didn't happen that way. Oh, well. So, learned the hard way. But, I know that one thing I did do to make sure it was the alternator and not the battery. I always put a charger on the battery, and if the battery's down the next day all by itself, Well, that's one of the pointers. So, anyway, Mike, go ahead, FIL.
Okay, if your battery's going down that quick, either it's a battery or it's got a bad diode in the alternator. My buddy's 88 that I usually drive, I've got a 12,000 pound winch on it, and I have dual batteries on it, and which is isolated. I've got the charging system where it keeps both batteries charged at all times while it's running. But I have a solenoid in there also that when you're using the winch, I can flip the switch on it and tie both batteries together. That way I've got two batteries instead of one, but you got to have it running. Right. Okay, he's got a, also has a Jeep, the CJ7, I believe it is, and which we just got through putting the dual battery system in it, and we have the dual battery, large alternator, isolator system, and we're getting ready to put probably about a, I think about a 9,000 pound winch on the front of that, and it's going to be mount, set up the same way to where... if you got a winch, you'll be able to flip the switch and tie both batteries together and not run down your main battery. But if you're dead in the water, you'll still have one battery that you can suck yourself out for a ways. Back to you, KJ6FIL.
Yeah, and I think as anybody out there that's involved in any type of off-road stuff that's above and beyond the norm, as we call it, customizing, there are many, many different things to do. Some cost more than others. Some of them are basically to what kind of application and what you want to do. And believe me, the imagination is the only limiting thing here other than the pocketbook. But yeah, that's a good idea as far as that, of being an alternate of tying those together. And I know that, I don't know, underneath my hood, it's just cramped for space underneath there. And I know they do throw one battery down below the other, I think. Not too sure how that is. I think if I get to that point, though, kind of look at some of those Optimas that are the really deep cycle for at least the backup and possibly the quick start one for the other. But anyway, when I'm ready to do that, trust me, I'll be asking around. Let me reset. Anybody else out there with comments on setting up your vehicle for very sturdy backup power? And this, of course, is going to be great for many things, including ham radio. Don't know if you're going to be running that 1.5 kW linear off, off the battery, but... you might want one of those 150 waters. Anyway, please come back. Any comments?
When you get ready to do that, Tom, let me know, because we got the Jeep set up with that stacked battery system, and we are running the Optimas in it. Let me know on that one. In fact, the way I set the 88 Chevy up, I've got a flip switch under the hood of it, and which has got a toggle protector, so you got to have the hood open to turn on the solenoid to tie both batteries together. And as soon as you close the hood, the hinge actually pushes the switch back down and shuts it off. KJ6FIL.
Well, that sounds like a very, very clever mechanism to make sure that you have starting power, at least in that reasonable of method of that you will have the hood open. So, well, good deal. Yes, definitely do. Definitely want to talk about that. Seems like summer has just flown by. I have a million things still left on my to-do list for summer. It's September. So speaking of that, September, another little division of what we're talking about here with our backup generators and power and all this. A friend of mine over there in Boulder Bay, KD6LEN, has his little monthly routine. I believe it's monthly. Maybe it's weekly. Yeah, monthly. Of pull starting that generator up, I know I'm very bad about that. I am very lucky that mine will sit for like a year and still start. But you know what? While the weather is still just a little bit before the snow season, everybody out there, get out there and get your stuff ready you're going to need just in case that blizzard hits. Let me reset. Any comments on maintaining equipment like that, stuff that you have done yourself out there, please come back. KF6Q.
YNW.
Now go ahead, Chris.
Yes, I don't know, but these cars are more and more computerized, including how they include the battery. I don't know if you put in a bigger alternator, does that rock any boat? And I haven't got the answer to that. K6YNW.
You know, Chris, shooting from the hip with that, I'm shooting from the hip on that. I'm going to say that it's probably not going to earn anything as long as it's, say if you have like a 100 amp or 110 amp alternator, you're trying to get up there to 200 or 300 amps, definitely going to cost some coin. There's no doubt about that. And if it's physically, the best thing to do is look for one that's possibly, an alternate to what else was available when the vehicle was new. Or an off-market manufacturer that'll, has one that'll fit your vehicle. Generally, they've got that worked out where, there's not going to be an issue. But, here again, you gotta watch all that stuff. You gotta make sure the cables are right and it's gonna all work together. And like Mike said, if you're pulling that much power, if you got another battery, definitely gotta have an isolator. So, which is what I was trying to explain earlier. I know they do have that with a lot of first responders. Let me reset. Also, if you're working on stuff on your vehicle, and a lot of the newer vehicles with airbags, I always say first thing you want to do, if you look through any of the do-it-yourself books, first thing you do is disconnect that battery so you don't automatically accidentally trigger the airbag deployment system. That's very embarrassing, painful, and expensive. Haven't been there or done that, but have heard about it. This is KF6Q Tech Tuesday. Any other comments out there? We're just kind of letting it run wild here with backup power and generators and alternators and things, oh my, that go under the hood of your vehicle for, the worst case scenarios. Please come back to KF6Q.
And YNW.
And go ahead, Harold, first.
Well, one thing, whenever you start putting heavier alternators on, you're going to have to probably rewire part of your car and put a heavier regulator in. And otherwise, it's a possibility that they're kind of cheap when they put that stuff in there in the factory. And one thing that I drove a truck, I was running into 101 into San Jose and back, San Francisco up there, and this guy who hauled produce on 101 had an amplifier underneath the right front seat of his tractor. He said that even in the winter up in the bay, as long as he kept the amplifier running, talking on the radio, why he didn't have to turn his heaters on. When you'd see him coming down at night, why both of his antennas were glowing blue. And I asked him, where the hell do you get all that power? And he said he put a complete alternator and something else in to power just his radio and his amplifier, 86 PO.
That must have been pretty awesome, and I want to get back to that because we're looking at a lot of 24 volt systems there. But first, I'm going to hand it over to Chris. Go ahead, Chris, YNW.
Yes, this would have been a bit more proper the last couple of weeks, but if you take a battery out, you lose your radio's memories and things like that. It can be worse than that. Sometimes the airbags have to be reset. You can take a 9-volt battery and put in a cigarette lighter and preserve all that while you're changing a battery. K6YNW.
And that's a very good point there. 9-volt, or even if you have a little 12-volt jail cell kicking around, because a lot of radios do, well, besides losing everything, some radios actually have a key code in there so that if power is removed, as in stolen, they will not operate. Another great theft protection feature. I'm sure the people who steal those know how to go around that, but anyway, it keeps us honest people thinking, like, how do I get my radio back on? So anyway, good point there. You've got to be careful a bit about some of that stuff. Another little sidebar thing on the battery. Did this through my wife's truck, replaced the battery. Give us some time before you go to get your vehicle smogged, because the computer, and this is a 2000 vehicle, Ford, takes a while to think about everything again, and have to drive it about 200 or 300 miles for the computer to evaluate everything, get everything reset. I don't know why it's that way. In fact, I was rather not happy with hearing that, but that's what it is. Anyway, anybody come back with any more topics on that and ideas and questions and suggestions, come back to KF6Q, Tech Tuesday, open night.
Okay, YNW again.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, a friend of mine, the air conditioning would go on and then go off, and same thing for other odd things. And it was driving a little crazy. Turned out the battery, I guess, was running out or something like that. When they replaced the battery, things were fine, although it took a little while for them to adjust. K6YNW.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good point. And just as a little follow-up there, if anybody was listening about the my experience with the windshield, this has nothing to do with our topic, but I'm going to throw this in. The glass shop that I did get recommended by George, actually, after I did go down to their shop, and I didn't get them to come up here to Big Bear, they did do an excellent job, did take care of it pretty quick, and very, very reasonable prices. So that, we'll talk about that later. As also, I am not looking at fractal science through my windshield anymore, and even got new windshield wipers. Yes, KF6Q is getting ready for winter. Anybody else out there, anything else on our backup power systems for all, you know, we have extra lights we put on our vehicles. We got lights, we got winches, we got radios, we got power amps. Boy, yeah, I think we do need, probably need dual alternators. Harold, tell me any more about that. Now, this is on diesel, so this is all 24 volt system, is that correct?
It's actually four batteries. I guess they're two sets parallel, then in series. And he was running his radio and his amplifier off of a completely separate system. He said that, you know, that system would not run an amplifier. He couldn't afford the batteries, buying them over and over and over. So he put he told me it was a big oversized amp. He had somebody that knew what they were doing professionally install the whole work, and I don't know what they put in as a softener, and I wouldn't think that you would want to run it straight off of that alternator, but he had went to some shop somewhere. He lived up in L.A., and they put the all the stuff in for him. It cost him a fortune, but he could hear that stupid thing everywhere. I know when the skip was in, you hear it all over the East Coast. And like I said, when he would kick it up, he's coming down the coast, and you can spot him several miles away because there would come two blue lights toward you up in the air. And that was before they had lighted antennas, the 86 field.
The good old aurora of the antennas, yes, that definitely is a giveaway. Of course, we all know he was working 10 meters, not 11. Anyway, well, that's great, because I think that there's a lot out there to be had about that, and a lot of different systems, and many, many, many different things to do. So Anyways, we are getting close to 8 o'clock hour here, and we have rescued it, I do believe, over Keller, starting up here pretty quick. But I do appreciate everybody being out there this evening, kind of like an open evening, talking about our different things we've done for modification. Like I said, if you're into any off-road or anything where you need alternate lighting that's a little bit on the heavy current side, all this stuff, including your ham radio, all the same basic wiring, beefy wiring, can't be, I can't say it enough, just be safe about that. If you have any doubts and your do-it-yourself skills, please contact somebody who's knowledgeable, or you take it to a shop. So anyway, last call for comments before we close the net. This is KF6Q.
KJ6KDL.
Yeah, Jim, go ahead. KJ6KDL.
Now, this is one observation and then a comment from a news article I just heard this morning, actually. The first one's on LEDs. I know there's been a lot of headway in bright LED headlamps and marker lights, things like that. I just noticed on some small night lights that we bought a package of about a year and a half or so ago. We pulled a couple of them shortly after because it was overkill, and I plugged one in this weekend to add extra lighting, and I noticed that the one that had been sitting out for about a year and a half is not dramatically but noticeably brighter than the ones that have been on for a while. So it looks like maybe in my case I'm seeing some degradation. These are probably old LEDs, but anybody else out there who has the opportunity to do that same test, I'm curious to see if this is just indicative of cheap LEDs. And the other one is, I heard one of the exotic car manufacturers, I can't remember if it was BMW or Mercedes, is working on laser-powered, high-efficiency headlamps. So keep your ear peeled and searching around and see what kind of progress they make. I'm curious to see what laser headlamps actually do in the real world. KJ6KDL.
Comments?
Go ahead, comment. Thanks, Jim, for that good information. Back to comment. Go ahead.
This is Cindy, WB6CIN. I've worked with a lot of LEDs for the government, for the military planes, and we always had to even check them once we stocked them because they'd go way down in brightness. And, that's about all. But LEDs do go down in brightness really quick.
All right, well, I'm glad to hear that. That means what I've seen and what Jim's seen, that our eyesight's not acting up. Little joke there, sorry. Thanks, Cindy, for that information. Anybody else out there for last call comments and little topics there real quick?
Comments?
Yeah, go ahead, Harold.
Yeah, for Mike. Mike's still around.
You're talking CLZ, Mike? He's still here.
Oh, I forgot there's more than one. Yeah. It's on the grounding or towers and that kind of thing. I saw them. I didn't get to sit there and watch the whole operation minute by minute, but I saw them put a cell tower in. They dig a square hole, about 15, 20 foot square. They drill a hole straight down through the center, about 20 foot deep, a little over 20 foot deep, for the base, for the main base. It's 8 or 10 foot in diameter. Well, I went by another one the other day. I thought when I was thinking about the grounding, I thought I remembered that I saw ground wires coming through the center of that base. Well, the one I went by the other day, they have the base in, and there's PVC with each one of them had, I think there was 6 PVC tubes, 2-inch or 3-inch coming up with 2 number 6 bare copper on them out of the bottom of the pit up through the center of the concrete, and then actually all around. I counted 20-some pieces of wire all around the perimeter and up through the center. Now, does that sound feasible to you that they would be running ground wire straight up through the center of that concrete and inside conduit where it's not against the concrete, 86 feet?
Oh, my God. I've got it. Yeah, Harold, and they want a very low resistance ground on that, and as you know, those towers are quite large. So, they don't want to get into the concrete because if you have a lightning hit, it'll splay that concrete out, and basically it will explode with the lightning. But the lower the impedance ground, the better it is, and I would imagine that that's what they had to do to achieve that in that area. It may have been a real rocky or a real dry area. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I knew that from what the guy over on Keller told me about happening at his uncle's farm that, you know, you run the wire straight through the concrete, by lightning hits it, you got a concrete bomb. But I was wondering if that was, if I was just imagining that that's what that was for, or if it was something else, because I thought I remembered the first one I watched them do the whole thing, dig the holes and everything, drill the hole, they come in with the pre-rolled rebar and I think it was outer inner circle and then cross-hatched all the way down, and then I thought I remembered seeing the PVC coming up out of it with the copper in it and a huge amount of copper wire, so they're attaching wire all over that thing and going in every direction, and the outer perimeter on the wire is probably 10 foot or maybe a little more from the tower itself, so, and then you have the stuff going straight through, then you have stuff coming up around it, and so they have a really network of copper coming up out of the ground there, so that's what, that answered my question, 86 feet, thank you.
Comment and question? Yeah, have I got it back? Harold, real quick, was this when you say a tower, was this like a tower for like high tension wise, or what type of tower was it?
A cell tower. I'm not sure what this one's going to be. The one that I watched them dig the hole, and every day I checked the progress on it. I wasn't there all day long. But every afternoon I go by and I would check the progress, make sure they're doing it right and all that, you know. Give them a good boy if they did it right. But it's these phony palm trees and cedar trees. The cedar tree looks better in case they want to buy space in your front yard for it. The palm tree looks pretty crummy. 86 feet.
Well, Harold, all I can say is they have a budget to meet. And probably once they had the hole dug, maybe that was feasible. I know the copper directly in the concrete would have corrosion issues, and the PVC would still heat up. In fact, we're talking about 10,000 amp currents here. We're talking about superheat. I know that's the way they did it, but because they did it that way doesn't mean it's the right way. Sometimes it's a low-budget way, and they probably figure that in the odds that most of them won't get hit. I do know this, and I think Michael backed me up on this, and you know also that you superheat concrete, and it'll literally, it's shrapnel, so I don't know. Good point, though. Maybe somebody could do some research and see why they did it that way, because in my humble opinion, they totally screwed up there, so back to you, Harold.
Yeah, the reason I asked Mike, I thought maybe he had the code books or a website or something where he could check code on that, or maybe even know somebody that installs the stuff. Whenever I saw it, I thought, you know, it's a little weird, but maybe, you know, it's something safe and maybe it's a proper way to do it. I have no idea, because I'm the kind of person that, light switch goes short out, I'm the one who'll short out on. I'll get nailed no matter what I'm doing around electricity, so I'm a little leery of it. I don't like messing with it, and wiring cars and that kind of thing is different, but I still get it every once in a while there too. That's why I asked Mike, 86 feet.
Comment and question? Oh, no, and actually Mike and another listener we have out there, KA6CIA, both reputable sources of grounding. But it's one thing to be grounded. Another thing when you're talking about lightning protection grounding, which is a little bit different. Now we're not totally different, but with just basic grounding, ground is ground, and if you can get a good ground, that's great. But I think when you're looking at lightning protection, it kind of opens up a little bit of a can of worms there, and I think there might be a little conflict there, possibly not taking in all considerations there. Mike Seals Ed, opinion, go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, Tom. I was looking this up, too, and what was it? Here, if you have a 5-ohm tower ground on your wireless provider tower, they're talking about lightning damage here, it reduces your average maintenance bill to $25,000. If you have a higher resistance ground, you're looking $625,000. It goes up from there. But I haven't got that far, but they call it Motorola R56 standard, but that's as far as I've gotten. Yeah, there is a standard there, but that's about as far as I've gotten so far.
Okay, Mike, maybe you could, if it is even there, sometimes it's not, and I think this, well, multiple grounds is always great and better, and I guess that's where more is better. But I'm just concerned about that, even if it was in PVC, the heat, unless it was a very huge PVC, you know, just to let some dissipation go there, but it seems to me that kind of playing with fire there, you know, running that through the concrete. And like you say, you're digging a very big hole, and then you'd have to go way beyond that. Could be a reason why they couldn't go beyond that. Could be limitations of where they're putting in the towers or general limitations they run into as a typical situation. Holes already dug, put this in there. I know that's basically, in my book, that's a complete no. That's bad, but doesn't mean that it isn't done. And when Mike, I think you agree that a little bitter, what can I say?
There can be a lot said about that. I'm going to forward this site to you. It's a lightning protection site, Tom. I hope we're not doubling QRX. Donald, if you want me to forward that to you, you know, email me at wb6clz@awrl.net. And it's a lightning protection site. It's got a lot of information on it.
Okay. No, there's no doubling there. Appreciate that, Mike. I'd like to check that out. We are still in lightning season here in September. Isn't this weird? Weird weather this year. Anyway, oh, that's right. We're getting close to 2012. I forgot. Anyway, okay, good deal. Good topic there. Anybody else? We're still open until we close the net. So any other last call things? All right, I think we got it wrapped up this evening, and appreciate everybody out there listening in. Yeah, a little bit over on the time frame this tonight. QST, QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, acting as net control for the Tech Tuesday net. Closing the net at 2,000 hours and 13 minutes. Anybody with any further questions, please feel free to email me at KF6Q, Kilo, Foxtrot, 6, Quebec. That's KF6Q at ARRL.net. That's the A at ARRL.net. And we can always get you some more information. We'll have a lot of any other information, too, with setting up your radios. If you're one of the new techs out there listening in and can't get into the repeater, give me an email. Got some step-by-steps for some of the newer Yaesus and everything else. So. Alrighty, and appreciate once again all our listeners and participants that check in here every week. Do appreciate that. Please come back next week, and we'll have something new and exciting, or at least one of the two, to talk about. This is KF6Q, closing the net and returning the repeater back to normal use.